Welcome to Rare Disease Advisor's Rare Care Podcast, offering unique perspectives from researchers, clinicians, and influencers from the rare disease community.
Hello, and welcome to the Rare Care Podcast. This is your host, Larry Luxner, Senior Correspondent for Rare Disease Advisor. We're in Chicago at the 2026 Conference of the American Society of Clinical Oncology, or ASCO. And today's guest is Naomi Aziz, co-founder of the Endometrial Cancer Research Foundation. Born and raised in Malaysia, Naomi came to the United States in 2012 and was diagnosed 6 years later with endometrial cancer. In March 2019, after learning that her cancer had progressed to stage four, she underwent a hysterectomy. Now 34, she's here with us to tell us her story.
Hi, Larry. My name is Naomi Aziz, and I'm really excited to be here. So thank you.
Welcome. So before we talk about the foundation that you helped establish, and by the way, Naomi's title is officially Patient Advocacy and Engagement Lead. Let's hear a little bit about yourself, about your upbringing, and about your education, and how you found out that you, in fact, had endometrial cancer.
Of course. I thank you again for having me here. You know, to be quite honest, you would never think that you would ever get cancer. So after I graduated in 2013, I wind up working at the university that I graduated from.
Which was that?
Upper Iowa University. I later worked for the university and I became their annual giving director, their director of annual giving. And so I work very closely with students and alumni, which I enjoy very, very much. Sometime in 2018, early in 2018, I had experienced my symptoms with what I later found out that it was endometrial cancer.
What were your symptoms?
I had prolonged menstrual bleeding, and it wasn't just prolonged, it was very heavy. I had experienced a lot of pain in my pelvic area, in my back area. And so I had went to our local primary, and I was not satisfied with how they were handling it at the time.
What were you told? Because this is something we hear a lot.
So I was just told that it was just my period, that it can be treated with, you know, birth controls. And so I did. I started on birth control. And I really felt the oral birth control that I was taking at the time was not doing any justice at that moment. So sometime in March, I decided to go to a different medical provider, which was about an hour away. So keep in mind, I lived in a rural area in Iowa. So I had to travel, take half a day, drive for an hour, and go to my appointment. And they later convinced me to get an IUD. They had originally treated it with another oral oral birth control. And later, there was still no changes to my symptoms. We did an IUD. So I was still experiencing my menstrual cycle at the time.
And heavy bleeding.
And heavy bleeding. And when I say heavy bleeding, I'm talking about I can't sit in a meeting longer than 40 minutes. And if I do, I wind up having, you know, stains, not only on my pants, on the chair. And so there were times I had to use not only a tampon, I also had to use a pad simultaneously.
It was that bad?
It was that bad. And I would have to change every 1 hour. And the amount of stain I had to wash every night.
Well, you knew that wasn't normal.
I knew that wasn't normal. And to be told to drive to my appointments and to only see them for about, you know, less than 15 minutes, to only be told that, hey, it takes time for, you know, these treatments to work, was really frustrating. So sometime in July of 2018, I had experienced an emergency. I woke up with a pool of blood on my mattress, and I drove myself to the emergency room. I went to the bathroom and I found, you know, a large blood clot, you know, exiting from me. And I was in a lot of pain.
In the ER?
In the ER, yeah. And the doctor who was retired at the time, who was handling the emergency room, mentioned to me this, nothing about this is normal. I need you to advocate for yourself. I need you to find other, you know, doctors that can give you better answers.
He told you this in the ER?
In the ER.
Unbelievable.
Yes. So he was very, he felt very strong about this. He sat me down and he said, look, we're going to give you painkillers. They did a pelvic ultrasound.
Where was this, this hospital?
This is a local hospital near the town that I live in Iowa. So it's about, I want to say, 18 minutes away from where I live. So I went back to the OBGYN that I got the IUD from. The craziest part is in the emergency room, the doctor had shared with me that they couldn't find the IUD that I had. And so I went back to the medical provider that I see the OBGYN at. And they too can't find the IUD.
Where did it go?
I have no idea. I think it's quite impossible for it to, you know, get out.
To this day, you don't know?
No, I do. Oh. I do, yeah. We'll get to that in a second.
Okay. So
I was very frustrated, and they immediately suggested that they place another IUD in me. And I said, no. I said, I've had enough. I've had enough of you guys constantly telling me it is just my period. I am still bleeding. It's 6 months. It's been, you right. know.
No period lasted that long.
Yeah, yes. And, you know, this is July. I am frustrated. I am running out of options. And the thing is, Larry, as someone in their 20s at the time, I was 27 at the time, we're not told how to advocate for ourselves. We're not told how to advocate for ourselves in a hospital setting, in a medical setting. So we're always told, like, if we speak up, we would sound rude, or we're, you know, they would know better of how to handle the situation. And in this situation, they didn't. And so I was very frustrated about it. And they wanted to put another IUD. I said no. And I said, ever since I came here, I have not seen one consistent doctor. You guys kept on giving me different physicians, different nurse practitioners. I'm not being taken seriously here. And it was very frustrating because I see women who are pregnant and they're in there and they're being taken care of so well. And here I am with this abnormal issue and I'm being denied a path to diagnosis.
So what happened?
They asked me, what do you think it is? And I said, you know, anybody would Google their symptoms, and I came to the conclusion it might be endometriosis.
Did you yourself Google this?
Yes. And so they scheduled me to see a surgeon, and the surgeon said this is sometime in July. The surgeon said the next availability for a laparoscopic surgery to diagnose me with endometriosis will only be available in end of the year.
You're kidding.
Yes. And so I came to the decision. I met up with my friend Summer Swanzinger, and she told me, I think it's time that we go to Mayo Clinic. I think that it's time that we go to a different medical provider.
It's in Rochester, yeah.
So Mayo Clinic was about 2 hours away. I submitted all my documents, all my medical records, and they contacted me, and I had an appointment, I want to say, by September. Mm-hmm. And they met up with me. They asked me what I think it is and this and that. And I remember telling them, like, oh, they said that the IUD is no longer in me. And I remember the physician said that, you know, I think that's quite impossible. So we eventually did a laparoscopic surgery in November of 2018. Mm-hmm. And it was an outpatient procedure. Uh-huh. And so once I woke up from it, they said there's no evidence of endometriosis, but we did find some, you know, some polyps, and we had it removed, and we're going to get it tested. That was it. And so I remember driving home with my now husband, but then boyfriend, who was living in New York at the time, and he flew out just to be there with me. And he's like, oh my goodness, aren't you happy that it is not endometriosis? You have no evidence of endometriosis. And no, I was very skeptical because I was like, endometriosis, what is it then?
Right.
So 3 days later, you know, the doctor had mentioned to me on Friday that they would give me a call to give me the news, you know, what he had tested with the polyps. And then I think to myself, okay, it's Friday, it's 5 p.m. Maybe they're going to call me on Monday. Maybe they're going to spare me today. And later at about 5:15, I get a call. And, you know, the doctor said, I don't usually share these news with someone your age, but you have endometrial cancer, stage 2. And we would like to see you Monday. My entire... I felt like the room was spinning.
Who wants to be told that?
And keep in mind, I am...
You're 27.
27, living by myself with no family. And my family are all in Malaysia. And friends just all over the country. And at 27, living by yourself, you would think, oh, I'm independent. I can handle everything. I can drive myself here. I can take care of myself. And at that point, you reevaluate that.
Wow. But the story doesn't end there.
No, it doesn't.
It seems like it got worse.
It did. So on Monday, I met up with a doctor that specialized in the specific cancer and was told right away that a hysterectomy would be best.
Right.
And obviously... for myself and anybody who has ever known me, I have always wanted my own kids. I've always wanted my own. So I said no. And so the other option for treatment was through hormone therapy.
But that also entails risk.
Yes. And so we moved forward with it because it was my last fighting chance of preserving my, you know, my fertility.
Right.
Yeah. Organ. And so we did that, and for 3 months I felt very manic. I think a sight of just looking at someone pregnant or a sight of a baby crying in a plane would leave me crying or grieving of just the thought of losing my organ, my uterus. And so 3 months goes by, I experienced my first biopsy. And it was so painful. I remember the doctors, they told me, it's just going to be a pinch. And in reality, it wasn't a pinch. It was very, very painful. So they shared with me the news of the biopsy, and they immediately asked me to do my scans and all these other, tests. And I later come to learn in March of 2018, it had metastasized all the way up to my rib cage, and it was stage 4 endometrial cancer.
So the only hope basically was to go into this clinical trial that you mentioned.
So before I get to that, we actually did the hysterectomy. They did chemotherapy as well.
That was in March of 2019?
Yes, right after my surgery. 3 weeks right after my surgery, I did chemotherapy.
How did that affect you?
I couldn't recognize myself. I've never seen myself in that way.
Can you be specific?
In a sense that whenever I look at the mirror, I couldn't recognize her. I've never seen myself that sick. And it was tough because, you know, here in this country, you have to work on top of, you know, experiencing cancer treatment.
You were still working?
I was still working. I was still working. I was working to ensure that I still had insurance.
You were not given any kind of compensation or time off?
I was given some time off. I used it the best of my ability to attend my treatments, to have rest days. I also use a short-term and long-term disability days. And so it worked out. My benefits really good with the university. And so 6 months down the road, I had my reoccurrence.
What happened exactly?
It was sometime in June of 2020. Keep in mind, it was COVID year. It was the year of the COVID.
Oh, I remember well.
Yes. Yeah. I did my biopsy again, and they tested that my cancer had returned. Immediately, they had recommended the clinical trial. And I appreciate them a lot, because not only were they recommending me the clinical trial, they also talked about the other options that, you know, I may want to go with.
What other options were there at that point?
Chemotherapy, another form of chemotherapy.
But you didn't want to go through that again?
No, I did not. I just struggle with the thought of doing chemotherapy again. I did the clinical trial.
And can you explain to us what the clinical trial was for?
Yes,
exactly?
And at the time they were testing the dosage, the proper dosage for the treatment. Mm-hmm. And so they had administered this vaccine to me. And what it will do is it will immediately show signs of shrinkage of the nodules found in my body. And if it doesn't do that, it would give me a higher likelihood of, you know, accepting the treatments that I will get in the future.
But it worked.
I don't know if it worked. I would say it helped me with my future treatments, because afterwards they did a CT scan and there wasn't any signs of shrinkage with my nodules.
There was not.
There was not. So they immediately put me on Keytruda and Lenvima. So immunotherapy, right, and oral chemotherapy. So I was placed on that for about 3.5 years.
You needed to come in, of course.
I need to come in
for the infusion. Right.
Yep. Right. Every 20 to 30 minutes. And so it was interesting, because at the time it was COVID. So I would always have to wear a mask. Right. There's all these different rules.
Right.
My doctors got switched around because they needed to prioritize.
Were you starting to feel better, though?
I was looking at the scans, I want to say 3 months after the first, you know, 3 months, we definitely saw a reduction in size with my nodules.
And since you had undergone a hysterectomy, there was no more bleeding to talk about.
No more bleeding to talk about. So it was definitely something that, you know, they want to take control due to the fact that the first, you know, between the stages of stage 2 to stage 4, it was growing very, very fast.
Yes.
They wanted to take control of this. So I would say after 3 months of Keytruda and Lenvima, there's signs that showed that the nodules shrunk in size. So okay, in the next 3.5 years, it shrunk in size. Some of the nodules are gone. Some of them became stable, and we eventually, in November 2023, they said, you know, it's been stable for quite a while now. I think it's best that we have them surgically remove.
What?
The nodules in my abdomen. And so they had them remove, and also I was dealing with some issues with hernia. And so I did the surgery with the same surgeon. After that, we did a scan, and they shared the news that I have no evidence of the disease.
Wow, what a story. In the interest of time, since we have to wrap up in a few minutes, describe briefly your position with the Endometrial Cancer Research Foundation.
Absolutely.
Is this a job or a volunteer position?
It's a volunteer position.
So you're still working in your current job?
I'm no longer working for my current job. I unfortunately left that job in 2021.
Right.
Due to the fact that the side effects from immunotherapy and oral chemotherapy can be harsh, especially with the nature of my job. I did a lot of events at the time. I work with, right, a lot of students and alumni. So with this job, with Endometrial Cancer Research Foundation, It is a very interesting story, because I met a lady by the name of Corby Arthur, who is the founder. She recruited, you know, like minds and other endometrial cancer survivors to work on forming this organization.
Mm-hmm.
As the patient advocacy and engagement lead. I work with design with the branding. We had someone volunteered and designed the logo.
How big is your staff and what kind of a budget do you have?
There is about six of us.
Are there any other organizations doing what you're doing for endometrial cancer?
There are other organizations, but they are more specific towards gynecological cancer.
I understand. Right.
So this is specifically just for endometrial cancer.
I understand.
Yes.
Just a question, if I may. Do you also do events such as attending this
ASCO? No, we will hope to one day. Okay. We are not currently doing that. We do have a program, a resource right now, which we partner with iSIMCA, and they pretty much provide this thing called Trial Finder, and it allows our followers to look up a trial. It can be about endometrial cancer or right. any other diseases, and find a trial that is, based from clinicaltrials.gov, and pretty much explain it in layman's term.
Before we wrap up, I have to ask you, whatever happened to the IUD?
Oh, I forgot to mention that. When I did the laparoscopic surgery in November of 2018, my doctor said that they found it. It was pierced on my uterus, and that's why they couldn't find it.
Well, that's the answer to the riddle. we unfortunately have no more time left. This has been fascinating, emotional, but enlightening, I must say. We've been speaking with Naomi Aziz, Patient Advocacy and Engagement Lead at the Endometrial Cancer Research Foundation. This is Larry Luxner for Rare Disease Advisor.
Be sure to follow the latest news, perspectives, and clinical resources on rare diseases at rarediseaseadvisor.com. Thank you for listening.